Hey, this is Kevin Sorbo here, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box. And really, do some thinking, seriously. This is Kevin Smith, Silent Bob from all those terrible Jay and Silent Bob type pictures, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box, comics talk for comics fans.
Hey everybody, thank you once again to Kevin Smith for doing that great introduction for us, and can you believe it guys, this is already episode 31 and we have over 1,500 downloads, and only about 1,000 of those are from me. So we're doing great. How are we doing today, Josh Opper?
I am doing great. I am having a little evil twin brewing wet dream while we're playing.
A wet dream is always a good thing.
Yeah, I'm a lucid dreamer, so that's always an option for me.
Always an option.
Always an option.
I'm drinking a Kilowog, which is one of our favorite drinks. We're actually going to have a T-shirt that talks about that. But it's basically orange juice, club soda, tequila float with spice rum, everything that would poison my good friend LT. LT, what are you drinking tonight?
I'm not drinking tonight, Tom.
You might want a glass of water or something. You look dehydrated. You thirsty? Can I get you something?
I'm fine.
All right. And down in the desert moon that is Louisiana, how are you doing there, Mike Manning?
I am doing excellent. Happy to be back in Louisiana, although I really enjoyed my time in Los Angeles.
Speaking of Los Angeles, we're going to have a bonus episode coming up this week where you were on the set of Con Men 2 with our good friend Alan Tudyk. How did that go? Just give us a couple words to tease people about our extra episode.
Con Man Season 2 Extras is going to be me interviewing all the extras on Con Man Season 2. It is a phenomenal group of people. In addition to not only the editor of The Watchmen, we have several comic book creators, several producers and directors of movies, and I don't want to spoil it, but some other podcasters too.
Ooh. I can't wait to hear that, and that's going to be our extra bonus episode this week. But this week, we're going to be talking about patriotic characters. July 4th has just gone by for us. You guys are going to be listening to this kind of in the middle of July, but that's okay. We're still going to be talking about patriotic characters, and there's no real reason to get into what a patriotic character is. We can say it very simply as a character that kind of personifies a patriotic mood or spirit, be that one up from the United States or otherwise. And let's start with our good friend Tom Boucher. I'm sure you got something really cool to talk about when it comes to patriotic characters.
I chose the obvious, Captain America, and I wanted to talk about Captain America White by Jim Loeb and Tim Sale. This is a fantastic storyline that took place in World War II. In it, Bucky is very, very much a little self-conscious and is trying to continually prove himself to Captain America. It's just a really fantastic tale of a story in World War II with Captain America working with Nick Fury and the Howling Commandos on a mission. And it was fantastic. It had a little banter back and forth between Nick Fury and Captain America, kind of, you know, doing the male testosterone, bumping heads and bumping chests type of thing. And
You can say pissing contest. Go ahead.
A little bit of pissing contest. It was a family show. It's a family show, Tom. But anyway.
It's a Manson family show. We're okay.
Okay. And they ended up helping the French Resistance. And in it, they alluded to a character of Mockingbird. And they also got a member of the French Resistance just happened to be one of Tom's favorite characters. And he screwed them over. He twisted them in the – he stabbed them in the back and twisted the knife. Batroc the Leaper.
Oh, now I got to read this. Batroc the Leaper, one of the greatest characters ever developed. And let's not forget, though, not French.
Frank. but he was pretending to be a member of the French Resistance.
Well, he had that great accent. He can pretend to be whoever he wants to be.
He is a master of disguise.
He is a master of disguise.
I often pretend to be.
He could be like right behind you right now. That dog sitting behind Josh, that could be Badrock the Leaper, ready to leap.
Probably is.
It might be. And since we just mentioned Josh, Josh, who's your favorite patriotic character?
So I have she is patriotic, don't get me wrong. American Maid. I love the Tick series. American Maid has so many facets to it, and I'm going to tell you why. Okay? So first of all, American Maid is, in the entire Tick series, the only competent person in the entire Tick series. As far as being a superhero is concerned, she really is the top notch. Now,
it's too bad no one listened to her.
It's true.
It's and true.
We might ask why the author made her American Maid, right? So this really stems from the play on Deflator Mouse. So we all know Deflator Mouse, right, who is the Batman parody, but he's actually named after an opera called Deflator Mouse, in which the main character is in love with essentially a maid, and it's an unrequited love. And so he wanted a patriotic character, and he really wanted to make a huge play on Deflator Mouse as the character, and so he involved the entire subset of characters and made her American Maid so that Deflator Mouse could have an unrequited love with a maid who's in costume. And so really
this is like the very definition of overthinking it on an Arthur's part.
Absolutely. He just wanted something that was so intricate that pretty much no one would get it.
Fine, you're the smartest guy in the room, but if we don't get it, we don't get it. I never got that, and I love that series.
And it's a German opera, and really it's about people in disguise, one of which who is in love with a maid who's the only heroine in the entire opera and will not return this poor bastard's love. And that is the essence of Deflator Mouse in American Maid. But I love that he made her the symbol of America and competent and somehow – still all got that in the underplay of the entire Tick series with less than 1% of the population knowing why.
Well, you know, I patted myself on the back until I was sore for knowing who Deflator Mouse is, only because I happened to watch a German opera maybe once. I'm like, that sounds familiar, and I Googled the shit. I'm not going to put on airs here. I had to look it up. But, man, I would never have gotten the American Maid part if you didn't tell me about it. And I like that. And I was really upset when they dumbed it down to Bat-Manuel. What the is that?
The TV show, the sub-characters were horrible. Yeah, they butchered the entire subplot there. They butchered the essence between those two characters and made them Bat-Manuel, which, you know, is inclusive. And then what did they make American Maid in the TV show?
I think she was still American Maid. She was just not as competent. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so they left her American Maid, which now there's no real connection there. But I do have to say, what's-his-name was the perfect Tick.
And that was the perfect Tick.
Netflix is thinking about picking it back up for season two.
I've heard they pretty much are going to pick it up. They're just ironing out the money, and Patrick Warburton has to get out of Crowded, which is a TV show he's on now.
I think Patrick Warburton needs to get out of getting old. Like, they need to make that series sooner than later because he will not be the Tick for long.
He looks great still. I mean, he's on this TV show called Crowded, and he's still a ginormous man.
And he looked good in the Tick outfit in Ted 2 also. But
good point.
Yeah, also, it was she played Captain Liberty, not American Maid.
Captain Liberty, right.
On the live-action Tick.
I couldn't remember what they renamed her to.
They got bleached, too. In my head, I keep calling her American Maid because screw those guys.
Yeah. Personally, I liked the Tick cartoon much better than the live-action.
Certainly, the cartoon was brilliant.
And I thought American Maid was absolutely brilliant in that.
And Tom and myself all live less than a half hour away from the creator. We can go stop at his house if you really want to.
Let's go do that.
It's in Stoughton, Massachusetts.
That's a quick get. Let's do that.
Yeah.
Mikey, what is your favorite patriotic character of all time?
I'm going to cheat. I'm going to declare a team as my favorite patriotic characters. I've always been a fan of World War II comics, but my first one that I started reading as a kid were The Invaders, which consisted of the Submariner, the Human Torch, his sidekick Toro, Captain America, and Bucky Barnes. And then later on, they had Spitfire and Union Jack. Now, this was actually based on the All-Winners squad that they published for Timely Comics after World War II, but set in World War II, where it was one of the first comics that the characters didn't get along with each other and really paved the way for what Timely would become, which is Marvel Comics. In the 1970s, Roy Thomas wanted to recreate that feeling, so he launched The Invaders, which, again, that was one of my favorite. I loved them going up against the super Nazi villains and the formation of Hydra. I love the fact that they had the British had their own super soldier in Union Jack. And I really, for some reason, Baron Blood was one of my favorite villains when I was a kid. I don't know why.
Baron Blood was cool, a Nazi vampire. How can you not hate a Nazi vampire?
And, well, actually, Baron Blood, although he's a Nazi vampire, is actually older than Nazism. He goes back in World War I and is fighting the original Union Jack in the comic book continuity.
Oh, yeah, he's a vampire. Who knows how old that guy is? Well, I also cheated. I don't want to say cheated, but I took an easy route on this one, and that is I chose Uncle Sam from the Freedom Fighters. Do you guys remember Uncle Sam?
Of course.
Remember Uncle Sam.
Uncle Sam was from Earth X, right?
You mean Uncle Slam, Tom?
No, I'm going to get into Uncle Slam. Don't you worry about it, you little bastard. So Uncle Sam is the actual personification of the American spirit brought to life in a person. Now, when it was first done in National Comics number 1, which was published by Quality Comics, there was an amulet that stored all this patriotic spirit, and it would, from time to time, bring very patriotic people back to life. The first one was an American War, a Revolutionary War soldier who was so patriotic that he couldn't die as long as the American dream was alive. So he was brought back to life by this amulet. This gets rewritten a little bit when Quality Comics is picked up by DC Comics, and the Spectre tells the story of how Uncle Sam was actually done by an occult ritual that the founding fathers did, that the spirit of America would always be around to help the United States. So the first time it personified, it was a Minuteman. The second time was Brother Jonathan. If you're a history dork like I am, Brother Jonathan is actually the spirit of capitalism in America and wasn't really thought of as a very good character. And later during the American Civil War, Uncle Sam splits into two characters, Johnny Reb and Billy Yank. So he's both a Revolutionary War soldier. I mean, I'm sorry, both a Confederate soldier and a Yankee soldier at the same exact time finding himself, which I thought is really funny. We start seeing the normal kind of superhero Uncle Sam later on after World War I, where he is brought back to life as a political cartoonist who was killed by Boss Tweed. If you're a super nerdy historian like I am, hearing all these names just makes your head spin, because Boss Tweed is such a cool character in real life, and having him kill a political cartoonist makes so much sense, because political cartoons are what bought Boss Tweed and the New York Machine down. So all of this makes total sense in continuity if you're a history nerd. If you're not, I don't understand how any comic book person would really enjoy it as much as I do. So picture the actual character of Uncle Sam in the big red, white, and blue suit with the top hat, two-fisted, fighting Nazis, and that's the kind of Uncle Sam of the Freedom Fighters. And I enjoyed watching him. And as an homage, my good friend Joshua Opper, when we fought as a not only in Incredibly Strange Wrestling, but also in Chaotic World Wrestling, he would take on the persona of Uncle Slam.
That's right.
Josh, you want to tell us a little bit about Uncle Slam?
No, it was the Red, White, and Blue Avenger. I freaking loved that costume. It was fantastic. He was great to job as. He almost always lost because the crowd was a bunch of bitches.
Yeah, but we wrestled in San Francisco, and you came out as the Spirit of America. We would invariably have some of our gay wrestling friends just kick the crap out of you for no reason because it went over well with the crowd.
Indeed. And is there anything better than getting your ass kicked by a gay dude in a ring? Possibly with whipped cream and balloons.
Oh, do you remember the time that Peter just...
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I do remember that. Do you want to air that now? Is that what we're doing?
Yeah, let's talk about that now. Peter played El Homo Loco. Peter was a great guy, is still a great guy. He actually ran for mayor of Los Angeles not too long ago. That's true. He moved down to Los Angeles. Peter is just a big wrestler named El Homo Loco. He was a joy to work with, one of the better guys in the ring. Super funny. Wrestled in a tutu, and he just beat the crap out of you, then covered you with cream, and left you for dead in the ring.
Thanks to the magic of the internet, Tom, I was just looking at the Uncle Sam character, and apparently in the New 52, he has changed gender and become Columbia, which was the female version of Uncle Sam. Back in the early days, John Sewell wanted to name America Columbia, and he had a representative for America named Columbina, who would have was very similar in appearance to Uncle Sam, the Red, White, Blue, the whole outfit as a character to promote his wanting to name the America the United States Columbia instead.
Well, that's great. So, how many comic books has that appeared in, or is that more?
It's Earth 11 of the New 52. The female version of Sam is called Columbia. So,
oh, look that up. That's great.
She is the leader of the Freedom Fighters.
It's going to be probably terrific. In Multiversity, the Grant Morrison stuff, right?
Yes.
Multiversity, the grandma. All right, I will definitely look that up. And speaking of looking stuff up, you guys always give us great recommendations when we go to the back and the front. So, Mikey, why don't you tell us what you got at the front of the long box for us today?
Penguins versus Possums from Fanbase Press.
Is that only because you love alliteration so much?
I am a fan of alliteration, but it is just a fun comic book. It is ridiculous. It is by Fanboy Comics. You can pick it up from fanbasepress.com, or it's also on Comixology. It's a black and white comic book. It reminds me so much of an old Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. It takes a ridiculous idea and then takes it so very seriously. The opening scene is a bunch of penguins are in a zoo, and a group of possums attacks. The penguins pull out their AK-47s, mow down the possums as much as they can. One of them gets away. All the whole time, a group of kids roll up, and the penguins have to hide the possums' bodies so that the humans don't know about this ancient war that is going on. So it's got two thumbs up from me.
Did the possums just pretend to be dead?
One of them did. One of them did. That's how he got away, because they were like, clean up these bodies, and one started dragging it away. And then the possum got up, smashed the guy, and ran away. And they're like, oh, rookie mistake.
Rookie mistake. Well played, Senior Possum. Well played.
Well played. Well, that's at the front of the long box. I'm definitely going to have to pick that one up. Tommy, what do you got at the back of the long box?
I'd like to talk about Kirby Genesis. This came out in 2012. It had art by Alex Ross and Jack Herbert. It was written by Kurt Busiek. This was a giant kind of homage to Jack Kirby, using some of the characters that he created but never really released or did much with. The story I didn't really care for, but the art is amazing. The story, it was just, there wasn't a lot of character development. Instead, it was kind of super group introduction, go to battle to another super group who also was battling. And, and it, eventually brought in Imagination Land characters of like genies and Vikings. The story was just kind of all over the place, everyone trying to get this proto seed that was on Earth. And it was very convoluted, but the artwork is great. You know, if you've got Comixology Unlimited, download it, take a look. It is absolutely stunning artwork. But once again, it was just kind of like nonstop action without a lot of character development in the storyline.
I'm going to rewind just a couple of seconds and say, did you just call Vikings imaginary?
This Viking was totally imaginary because was like all over the place.
You're like, unicorns and Vikings, all imaginary.
It was Vikings.
Things that don't exist, like the Queen of England.
Or Eskimos. There was a character from an island that was a Nazi that had been alive for hundreds of years. It was ridiculous upon ridiculous.
Oh. Laotian.
There was even Bigfoot.
That's right.
A Bigfoot, a Laotian, an Eskimo. Like, they're just nuts.
I am surprised the Bothans weren't put in this.
They all died. Many Bothans. Yeah,
they all died.
I sent a Bothan to give me a cup of coffee. Like, seven died. These are not hardy people.
It's true. They're not. They are completely unreliable.
Yeah. Hey, can you make some copies? Oh, son of a bitch. They just drop.
Once again,
they're like feigning goats.
Stunning.
Yeah.
All right, so today I'm going to take kind of an odd angle when it comes to social justice in comic books and talk about a character that appears in Rick and Morty, and that would be Aberdolf Linkler. Aberdolf Linkler is the gene spliced together of both Abraham Lincoln and Adolf Hitler in a crazed attempt to make the perfect leader. The reason I want to just to mention this character is because it shows the duality of its own nature and also shows the difference between nature and nurture. It's an interesting contradiction in the scene in what is ostensibly just a toss-away kids cartoon. Of course, Rick and Morty, not really for kids. Seeing the character go to war with himself is why it's so interesting. You can see that he's conflicted because he believes in both the emancipation of African Americans and also that there are inferior genes that should be squashed. I think that it kind of shows the duality of some of our own inner conflicts sometimes when we're going, well, of course, African Americans aren't blank, but some are. Or when we're thinking, when we're feeling a little conflicted about some of the stereotypes we see every day, and sometimes we are a little conflicted. This is an interesting character that kind of shows that conflict that some of us are feeling at times. So when it comes to social justice and civil rights, it's an interesting character to kind of look at as kind of a little release valve.
And he died a hero, right?
He did die a hero. He wanted Rick to know that all he really wanted was for his father, which would have been Rick, to love him. So even though he was created a monster with a monster's genes, he was still able to overcome his own terrible nature and die a hero. And also get Rick some Kalaxian crystals, which I hear is a huge buzz, but fleeting.
And also, he's voiced by Maurice LaMarche, who was the Brain in Pinky and the Brain, who I love. And he was Egon Spengler in The Real Ghostbusters. Enough said.
I did not know he was Egon Spengler in The Real Ghostbusters. I knew he was the Brain. And since we're off on a tangent when it comes to that, Josh, why don't you take us out on a tangent?
So we had talked about our American heroes, and I talked about an American hero became a cartoon. So let's talk about our favorite hero who turned into a cartoon.
Our favorite hero? Oh, Mike Tyson. The Mike Tyson Adventures. Screw you guys. I got Mike Tyson. If you haven't seen the Mike Tyson Adventures, it is a cross between Scooby-Doo and A Fever Dream by King. It's the craziest thing you'll ever see in your life, and it's hilarious. He gets some great people to voice characters on that, and Mike Tyson Mystery Adventures or Mystery something is really funny. You can get it on Amazon. If you haven't seen the Mike Tyson Mystery Adventures, go see it.
So Hunter S. Thompson watches that and goes, wow, that's a little too trippy for me.
Mikey, what's one of your heroes that became a cartoon?
The Harlem Globetrotters.
Ah!
Well, I loved the Harlem Globetrotters when we were growing up. They would appear on the ABC Wide World of Sports. They were not the agony of defeat, by the way. They were the thrill of victory. And it was an event. Every time one of us found the Harlem Globetrotters were playing, we would call up our other friends and let them know, turn on the TV, the Globetrotters are on. It's hard to imagine now, but when there were only three networks, the Globetrotters transcended everything. And, you know, when they were introduced into Scooby-Doo, I was like, of course, that made perfect sense to me because I also watched them on Saturday mornings.
Mike, did you enjoy it when they had their own cartoon and they had some really crazy powers? Like, what's his name could throw, could pull stuff out of his afro, and one of them had like long arms. Did you like that cartoon?
I completely forgot about that. Yeah, I remember that cartoon. Yeah, that was on,
that was
CBS, right?
Awesome.
Part of me wants to say Mr. T because I loved when his cartoons were remixed and they were telling people to stay on drugs and keep off school. But really, I think my favorite would be Jackie Chan, the Jackie Chan Adventures.
That was fun.
Because Jackie Chan is if you ever read his biography, he's an amazing, amazing person.
Wholeheartedly agree. Josh?
I have to go with Evel Knievel. So Evel Knievel had his own cartoon for a little while. It was very short-lived. But he was also made a couple appearances in Batman, and he made a couple of appearances in a comic called Team America by Marvel. And I really loved Evel Knievel. I loved the whole motorcycle jumping thing when I was a kid, mostly because Tom and I all grew up in a town, dear old Munson, Massachusetts, where Danger Doug Senecal lived and jumped all the time when we were kids, especially during the 4th of July.
For almost any event.
He broke more of Evel Knievel's records than anyone else. He just had the worst publicist ever, because in the Guinness Book of World Record, where Doug Senecal is breaking Evel Knievel's ramp-to-ramp jump, there's a picture of Evel Knievel's son failing to do it. Like, how bad is your publicist when that happens to you?
Yeah, Danger, yeah, Senecal got no love.
He still owns a bar in Belchertown. He's local.
We should go get a drink at that bar. We really
Absolutely.
Should.
Absolutely.
Let's give this guy some money. He used to jump for any reason. Like, oh, what, the school bus needs some rewiring? I'll do a charity jump.
Yep. He was there.
Like, oh, car wash? I'll jump the car wash. It was crazy. And there were always cool jumps. I mean, it wasn't like, I'll jump like two cars. I'll jump like nine cars. Screw that. He should have been a cartoon.
It's Danger true. Doug. And in the 70s, Daredevils were king.
Yeah.
You guys remember a cartoon?
Bones heal, chicks dig scars, and America has the greatest doctor to Daredevil ratio in the world. Enough
Damn
said.
Right. do you guys remember the Devlins? That was a cartoon about a family of Daredevils called the Devlins. And they would not only jump their motorcycles at the circus, but also solve mysteries every once in a while. It was a cross between Evel Knievel and Scooby-Doo. And a little bit of Speed Buggy in there, too.
A little bit of Speed Buggy.
A little bit of Speed Buggy.
A little dash of Speed Buggy in there.
little sous-sant of Speed Buggy.
All right.
Well, I think that's everything we had to talk about this week except for plugs. Who's got some good plugs for me?
I'll go with Mark McKenna. www.combatjacks.com. Check out his new independent comics available on Comixology or directly from the website. And Mark is a great guy.
All right. Tommy, I know you got someone to plug.
I would like to plug ianleino.com, IanLeino.com, purveyor of fine, fine geeky T-shirts and other things. Also, surf band Daikaiju. Go to daikaiju.org. to listen to monster-themed surf music.
Well, I'd like to plug not only our own Twitter feed, which is outside the long box at the long box, guys. You can go on there and talk to us and talk about episodes or just ask us questions. But also one of our new subscribers there, Brian J. at
J. Period is a real nice guy, and Mike interviews him in an upcoming podcast about being on Con Men season two with him. So I just want to give a little shout out to him. And Mike, do you have anything you'd like to plug?
As always, I'd like to plug Kirby Crackle for providing our music. KirbyCrackleMusic.com is where you can listen to them, or you can get them on iTunes. I'd also like to plug StarburnerCouriers.com, a place where you can go to get all your steampunky needs. I interviewed them during Con Man Season 2 Extras. In addition, I'd like to plug Movies Made Me Podcast. It is an excellent podcast where Cheryl Jones interviews people and they talk about five movies that affected their lives. The interview with Clancy Brown is phenomenal, so you should go check it out. It's called Movies Made Me Podcast, and it's available on iTunes.
All right, and last but not least, Mike, do we have a special interview at the end of this podcast this week?
Yeah, we're about to hear from Liam Sharp, who is one of the artists for the new Wonder Woman series. If you haven't checked it out, it is phenomenal. Greg Rucka is doing a killer job on the story, and Liam Sharp's artwork is just breathtaking. LT, I know if you check it out, you're going to be amazed by it because it's almost – I know he's not doing watercolors, but it's just so spectacular, the detail. I almost think it is watercolors.
All right, well, let's go to that interview right now then.
We are here at Space City Comic Con. Sir, could you introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Liam Sharp. I'm the current, well, one of the new two artists on Wonder Woman, and very glad to be here.
Now, you have a little bit of an accent. Where are you from?
Originally from England. I now live in the East Bay, so I'm an immigrant, basically, and happy to be one. This is an amazing place to live. I've always wanted to live here. I've been in the business for a long time, so it's my 30th year in comics, actually. But I've been over in the East Bay with a company called Madefire that I co-founded, which is a digital reading experience, and we now power the apps for companies like IDW and Valiant and several other things, as well as producing our own material. I did a series called Captain Stone is Missing with my wife, Christina. And that's been really exciting, but after 5 years of doing that, I was just really itching to get back into comics again, and I managed to land this amazing gig.
Now, how did you land the Wonder Woman? Did you get? Did you have to submit for it, or did they reach out to you?
Well, a little bit of both. I've known Jim Lee for an awful long time, since back in the early 90s when I was doing Deathhead. And he actually offered me way back then an opportunity to join him at Image, but I'd literally just met the woman who would later become my wife, and I wasn't kind of ready to leave England at that stage. In the back of my head, I was always like, maybe that would have been an awesome thing to do if the timing had been a bit better. And also, I was really enjoying doing Deathhead at the time, so I wasn't kind of ready to jump onto anything else just then. So having known Jim so long and having come over to America to set up a Madefire, we were doing quite a bit of work with DC, so we did Injustice, Gods Among Us as a motion book, which is actually an amazing reading experience. And we did a big project called Batman Arkham Origins, which is, it's great. You've actually got choice points in the game, so you can read this comic, but you get to certain panels and you can pick which way the story goes, and that was really exciting. So we were doing a lot of work with DC, basically, and we're constantly talking to them. And when it came to the point that, I mean, really what happened was Madefire is so sort of set up and is working like a dream now that it got to a point that I wasn't really needed there anymore. And it became evident that probably the best thing I could do is get back into the business and get drawing again. So I basically said to I started pestering Jim with texts. I kept sending him bits of artwork that I was doing at the weekend, so like a Batman, or, you know, I did a few Batman pieces, and I did a Swamp Thing piece that I sent over to him. And then I heard a little bird told me that Wonder Woman was available. I didn't immediately think that I would be a good fit for it. But there's a piece called Mouldering Stone, which is a Red Sonja piece that I did, which is really sort of detailed Barry Windsor Smith type thing. And it was Thanksgiving last year. I literally, that day, I'd heard that Wonder Woman might be available. And that night, I was turning off my computer and I saw the Red Sonja piece I'd done and thought, huh, actually, you could do Wonder Woman like that. And I woke up and I couldn't get it out of my head. And I was thinking about it and thinking about it. So I just sent Jim Lee a text with that Red Sonja piece going, you could do Wonder Woman like this. And he went, yeah, you could. Have you done any Wonder Woman? I said, no, but I will do. I will have by Monday. That was like Friday. So I spent the weekend doing this test piece, which is the piece I have here at the show. And I sent it to him and he went, yeah, that's going to happen. You know, I'm going to run this by the guys internally and see how it goes, you know. So I did. Basically, that was the first kind of inkling that it might actually happen. It took a few more months to get everything ironed out and to get the team sorted and figure out who's writing it and all of this. But really, I've been attached to it since Thanksgiving last year, really, since I sent the Red Sonja thing. I'm so thrilled to be doing it. It's amazing.
Yeah, I'm totally looking forward to it. Wonder Woman's one of my favorite characters, and you allowed me to see some of the preview pages, which look amazing. And not to give anything away too much, but you're doing an awesome job on one of Wonder Woman's major villain characters. Are you a big historian as far as Wonder Woman goes, or are you learning on the fly?
I'm becoming one, is probably the best answer. I mean, it's funny. I've always been associated, I guess, with monstrous characters and muscular characters and testosterone-fueled kind of nonsense. It's not that I picked that for myself. It's just that it turned out I was quite good at doing it. You know? So a few people were surprised that I've ended up doing Wonder Woman. I'm really thrilled because it's an opportunity to reset and also to introduce a lot of new people to my work because I've not really done a mainstream book for 20 years. In terms of historical knowledge of the character, I'm learning a bit on the fly, but I have been, since it looked like a possibility, I've really been steeping myself in the characters. I just love this universe. The more I scratch, the more I dig, the more I find out about it, the more I just realize this is like a gift for any artist. It's got everything, and of all the books I've ever drawn, this has the most, because it's got, you know, the mythological aspect, it's got the present-day aspect, it's got sort of crazy sci-fi aspect, it's got psychedelic aspects with, you know, some of the villains. The possibilities are just huge, and it seems to me at this stage, I don't even know how you could ever get bored of drawing this character, you know. It's great.
Well, I hope when you said psychedelic, we're going to get into Dr. Psycho because I can't wait to see your take on him because I've seen your take on some of the other characters or even Atta Candy. God, I love Atta Candy. But that's neither here nor there. How does it work with you working with Greg Rucka? Does he do the entire script and then send it to you, or are you part of the plotting? How does that work?
Greg's an amazing collaborator. I really love working with him. He and I talk all the time, so every other day, pretty much, he'll phone up or I'll phone him, and we throw stuff around. He's appreciative of the fact that I've written, you know, over the years, and that I have a creative aspect to me that is a storytelling aspect. And he's also, you know, he knows the kind of stuff that I like and that I'm into. So he's really open to ideas and suggestions, and he's been just like fantastic at, you know, if he hits a wall, what I love about him is he'll phone up and say, oh, I've got this idea and I think this is going to happen. And sometimes in a couple of instances, I've just been able to turn around straight away and go, oh, what about this? And he'll go, oh, yeah, yeah, that's perfect. Or, you know, obviously not all my ideas are great. So sometimes he'll go, no, that sucks, don't be stupid. in a much kinder way. But it's great to feel that you are part of a collaborative team and that I can contribute to the story. And he's even given me like 7-page sequences without, he's basically said, look, this has got to happen in these 7 pages. I'm not going to tell you which page number, you just do this. Just go and do it and it'll be fine, you know. And I understand that's the first time he's done that. And it seems to be working out really well. So he's just a joy to work with, you know. And not only that, I think he's very sensitive to the mood in comics at the moment. Ethically and philosophically, we're on a similar page. So, you know, we just gel really well.
Are there any other projects you're working on right now other than Wonder Woman?
Oh, no, I still am heavily involved with Madefire, so I advise there. I'm still, you know, I'm one of the co-founders of the company, so I'm. It's very close to my heart, and I'm extremely proud of it. And the stuff that they're doing and continue to do is just incredible. Obviously, there's my own book, which I still sort of tell people to check out. And that's Captain Stone that I mentioned earlier. I'm very proud of that work. It was a kind of piece of work that I needed to get out of my system for years. It's kind of more like a Elektra Assassin, Bill Sienkiewicz vibe than the stuff I'm doing at the moment. And Bill's amazing. I was also lucky to work with Bill on, we did an adaptation of a Sherlock Holmes story together. And that's on the Madefire app as well. I believe it's going to go to print, but we're just negotiating that at the moment. So there's a lot of stuff out there that people might not know that I've done with some, you know, great people that I'm very proud of. But I'm really thankful to sort of have an opportunity to do something which has obviously got a much bigger draw and is a genuine icon. I'm really fascinated too because the response to her at the moment is just phenomenal, you know, to have it hit the number 3 spot for orders for the Rebirth issues. Just incredible. I think it's a time for her. The book's for everybody. I think, you know, back in the 90s, a lot of boys wouldn't buy Wonder Woman because they'd think it was a girl's book. But anybody who did knew better. Obviously, there's the George Perez kind of set a high bar for everybody. I really loved the run, the recent run, the Cliff Chang run with Brian. I bought both of them as trades and just tore through them. I couldn't put them down. I thought they were amazing. We're not doing that. We're doing something that's kind of we're doing our own. I mean, it takes all that into account. Anybody who's following the Rebirth stuff will know that it's not a complete reset. It's a consolidation is probably the best way to put it. But yeah, busy.
All right. And could you explain to our listeners what a motion comic is?
Well, we do motion books.
Oh, no? I'm sorry, motion books.
No, well, it's not actually a fine line. Motion comics, I think, were a noble experiment. The problem with them is that they're essentially taking things that were never meant to move and making cheap animations out of them. So they're sort of too static. You don't have any control over reading them. With the voiceover and everything, you're not participating in it. You're sitting back. So it's not something that engages you. What we do is motion books, and that's a participatory thing. We were keen that you would still have total control over the reading experience. So there are tap points within each of the stories that will drive the story on, and you can go backwards and forwards, and you can zoom in, you can zoom out, and there is a little bit of animation, but we tended to find that people wanted to look at the art too, so it'll have a tiny bit of motion as each page comes in and then settle, and then you can just really enjoy the artwork and you know, and explore these books. We weren't going to add sound to start with. We still have word balloons, so it's a reading thing. We're very keen to keep that. But we weren't going to add any sound, and then right at the last moment we thought, well, we'd be cutting off our noses to spite our faces if we didn't at least try it. So we started adding ambient and soundtracks and things like that, and it worked just so much better. And we figured, well, if people don't like the sound, they can just turn it off. It's easy. You know, it doesn't stop you reading it is the main thing. So you can still read them on your mobile devices. You can read them on a train or a bus or a plane or whatever. But we're on Apple TV now, which is amazing on the TV. It's kind of, it's been a real adventure because where it's gone is so much bigger and broader and wider than we ever could have imagined. Getting Apple to, I mean, the fact that Apple got behind us so heftily was astonishing. Our own app, the Madefire app, was in the number one position in the books area of apps on the App Store for a year. Solid year. And we're still solid five-star rating on that app. And although a lot of people still haven't discovered it, when they do, it just keeps pulling in new readers all the time. People are really finding it now. And the thing is as well, it was set up by people from the industry who really care. So it was from print. You know, I'm from the print background. I'm not anti-print. I love print. We also know that, like, print hasn't been destroyed by digital. In fact, digital's helped, you know. It's a new entry point for people. It's possible now for people to find stories digitally and, you know, fall in love with comics through that. You know, you don't have to put foot in a comic shop in order to love comics. You can find it digitally, find a love for it, and then find the comic stores, and then get the stuff that you want. And you can have both versions, so you don't have to be filling your garage up with long boxes full of, you know, your favorite comics. You can really choose what you love, and then go out and buy the collected edition, or hopefully buy the pamphlets too. I mean, it's really important that people keep buying the comics themselves. But it's great. It's good.
So how can people see your work?
If you go to, it's a Madefire app for a start. And that's, you can either just go to madefire.com or you can download the app, and that's on Android and iOS. Or if you've got Apple TV, the app's on there. It's one of, we're invited to be one of the first 20 apps on the Apple TV. So you'll be able to find my capstone stuff on there. Or if you're on DeviantArt, I've got a big gallery there, and you can read motion books on DeviantArt as well. We have a partnership with them. So there's a lot of people making motion books. We have a tool that's free to everybody, and you can make and publish your own comics and put them online on DeviantArt. It's really an amazing tool, very easy to use. We don't take any ownership. If you sell it, then we get a percentage. But that's, you know, to my knowledge, it's the best deal out there. And if you put it out for free, then you get a URL and you can send it to anybody. And of course, that's just totally free. So there's a lot of very cool things about it. In terms of finding stuff of mine, there's a trade edition of Captain Stone is Missing that I'm incredibly proud of, 190 pages with all sorts of behind the scenes stuff. That's probably before this, you know, it's the thing I'm most proud of. But if you want to find my stuff now, then it's going to be the new Wonder Woman book, so very excited about that.
And I was able to track you down by Twitter. How can people follow you on Twitter?
I'm Liam R. Sharp. I think there's another Liam Sharp somewhere, so he got that, hey? So if you want to follow me on Twitter, please do. It's Liam R. Sharp. I try to follow everybody back, so if I miss anybody, just give me a nudge and I'll add you on. I think it's only fair. Hopefully see you on there. And I'm also on Facebook too, so just Google Liam Sharp, you'll find me.
All right, excellent. Well, thank you very much for your time.
Pleasure. Thank you.
That was such a great interview. Where did you meet for that interview?
I met him at Space City Comic Con, and it was actually before Wonder Woman came out, and so he showed me advanced pages of it, but he wouldn't let me buy them.
Yeah.
Well, because he knew they'd go up in price as soon as they hit the shelves.
As soon as they hit the shelves.
Yeah, the Wonder Woman Rebirth is killing it. In fact, all the Rebirth titles over at DC are pretty good. And I don't know if you guys have been paying attention to what Marvel's doing with Civil War II, but they have killed two major comic book characters in the first two issues of Civil War. Should I spoil it and tell you guys who they are? Or you want to guess?
Yes.
Go ahead and guess. Well, come on. Obviously.
Iron Man.
You are incredibly close.
War Machine.
Bingo. War Machine gets killed because, you know, he's a black dude in any Civil War. The black dudes
were
the ones
who they shot him in the armor.
Yeah, and the same with the first Civil War. Black Goliath is the one who bites the dust. So, and the number two character is actually one of my favorite Marvel characters. I was very upset when she died.
She died. Squirrel Girl. She can't die.
She's undefeated.
It was Carol Danvers, wasn't it?
It was not Ms. Marvel. She's got a movie coming out. They're not going to kill her.
Well,
I'm all out of love and guesses. Who was it, Mikey?
She-Hulk.
I got one more guess.
Oh, She-Hulk? Really?
Yeah.
Shocking.
Yeah, they killed She-Hulk. And it's kind of weird how they changed her character around, too. I won't go into too much detail. I'll talk about it on a later episode, but not a fan of them killing
She-Hulk.
She-Hulk. Yeah.
I like She-Hulk. Yeah, Jennifer. She was a great character.
She was. Women's empowerment.
Yeah. Well, that'll do it for us today then, everybody. And remember, look forward to having the bonus episode this week. And don't forget, guys, don't take time out of your day dissing what you hate. Just promote what you love. And Mikey, what is this podcast to you?
Hilarious for no apparent reason.
And I just got to ask you this, Josh. Is this your sector?
This is not my sector.
This is not your sector. All right. Goodbye from the long box, guys.
I pack my clothes and grab my single issues and wrap them up tight and make a list so my collection's complete.